Coffee Metal Podcast, episode 120.
Greetings and welcome to the Comics Coffee Metal Podcast. I am your host, Don Cardenas, and I hope you're going to have a fantastic week. So, not a ton of news in the Comics Coffee Metal front right now, but I do have to mention that there is a new Kickstarter launching very soon, if not already, for Spend the Night Issue 3 and 4. And while these are also going to be available in stores, Jack, the creator and writer of the project that I'm drawing, because I draw Spend the Night, if I failed to mention that, she noticed that some international customers were wondering when can they get issue 3 and issue 4, because her plan was to not keep doing Kickstarters once we got some distribution through Lunar and all that. But obviously we want everyone to have the book who's got the first two. So Jackie did launch a Kickstarter for those. So I will make sure there's a link in the show notes for that in case you just happened to miss out on third issue. I'm not sure exactly how the tiers are structured out as of recording. Given suggestions to Jackie about what to do, like kind of letting, having all issues available as a tier and things like that. I'm not sure if that's what she's doing exactly, or if this is just strictly, for the folks who did one and two and are international and they want issue 3, potentially 4. So, I don't need to be vague about it, but yeah, as of recording, that's what I know about everything. But I'll make sure there's a link to that in the show notes so you can go check it out in case you did miss it. And maybe you missed the first couple issues and you want to check it out, and now there's 3 issues to catch up on. Hopefully that's a tier she did with. If not, be rest assured, because Jackie and I have been talking about a collected edition for the first 4 issues, working on issue 4 right now. So that is definitely something that is in the works. So there will be a trade in the early next year, and all that. Jackie is trying to get to C2E2 and have a panel and a few things there. So hopefully we'll have some sort of a signing thing set up and all that, and the fingers crossed the trade will be ready and available at C2E2 as well, because that would be pretty awesome. Jackie's also got a couple other things she's working on that if they pan out are really cool. She knows a lot of people, and a lot of people really like her, so they're willing to do some extra favors and stuff like that. So it'd be pretty cool if certain people show up for things. But again, I can't speak out of turn on that. I'm just saying it's pretty cool that she's got a lot of excitement about the book and doing all that. So I'm looking forward to seeing what comes with that. Aside from that, Evie and the Helsings issue 2 should be at the printer at this point. I am working on the commission tiers. I'm almost done with the song. Face It, the second Evie and the Helsings song to release to everybody. There's a couple little arrangement tweaks on it that I'm trying to see how they sit before I'm like, yeah, this is it. Steve and I are going to start breaking down issue 3, and early next year, we'll be kickstarting issue number 3 and just moving on. So, I'm a busy boy. On top of all that, I'm still working on some more music, as I mentioned last week. With Kevin Mellon, we got some things happening there. And yeah, so, not a ton of new news, but plenty of busy news. So anyway, that's enough of my blathering. Let's move on to some cool recommendations. First up, I have a coffee recommendation this week, and it's an old recommendation because this was the first coffee that I really started talking about and drinking that wasn't like Dunkin' Donuts or a more standard kind of store brand, and that is the Javalia Medium Roast House Blend. This was my wife and I's first real, decent coffee. And, you know, it was the first one we would get the whole beans on and grind and do all that. So, you know, we were running, you know, out of our root list, and it was going to be another week or so before the subscription bag came in. So, you know, I usually take that time to try a different coffee, and I picked up something else that was looking interesting, and oh boy, I did not like it. Neither one of us did. It was something that tagged itself as a medium roast, and it was dark as fuck. And as a dark coffee, it was good. It was a good dark roast. But it was not something I would really go for as my own preference of a dark roast, and definitely not something my wife was digging. So thankfully we have my father-in-law, you know, pretty much drinks, you know, filtered dirt. So he was happy to take it along and all that. So I was, you know, struggling to find something else to pick. I wanted to pick something different. I really couldn't find anything because, you know, a lot of the things we can get quickly at the store, you know, even if it's like Target or, you know, our local Jewel Osco, Albertsons for some of you, there's, you know, still kind of limited options, even though there's more options, but I've kind of exhausted all of them, you know. And then I was like, you know what, I haven't had Javalia in years at this point. So I just picked it up, and yep, I still dig it. It's still really good. It's a lot dark than the rootless medium roast that we're used to now, and it took me a little while to like get that formulation right, because I made it really fucking strong one day, and my wife and I were kind of buzzing around quite a bit with it, but or at least I was, you know. I feel like she probably had a little bit more kick to it too, but it was definitely like, all right, yeah, it's definitely a bit stronger than our usual daily that we're used to now, but still really good, and we're still really enjoying it. We got a few more days left of it, and yeah, so if you're looking, you know, and it's a good price for a coffee too, you know. It's not one of those, you know, it's not over $10 or something like that with a lot of these nicer roasters are, you know, between like 12 and like 20 bucks for a bag. But you know, for a sub $10 bag of coffee, you can't go wrong with this. It is really, really good. So yeah, if you're at a store and you see some Javalia house blend, and you like maybe something a little bit stronger than a standard medium roast, definitely check that out. All right, my book recommendation this week is Madame Cat from the Life Imprint of Humanoids. This is written and illustrated by Nancy Pena, and it is a kind of a compilation of these slice of life vignettes of you know, the author and her cat, and her cat Madame, the titular cat. And, you know, the cat, you know, in these vignettes speaks, you know, there's speech bubbles and she's talking and all that. And they're really funny and they're really sweet and they're really cute in the way that, you know, is familiar to owners of cats and things like that. And this was like a really fun read. There's a lot of really cool stuff in here. The art's really nice. Pena does some washes with blue. I don't know if it's a coloring post-digital thing or if it's with blue ink, but it's definitely adds like a nice flavor to everything on there. The vignettes, again, all very funny, very relatable, and it was just a really like refreshing kind of read after reading quite a few horror things this past month for various reasons, and I kind of needed something to kind of like cleanse my palate, and this 100% did it. It's a lot of fun stuff, a lot of very sweet stuff, and it's just, you know, just really, really entertaining. I mean, I didn't sit down with it in one sitting. I would pick it up throughout the week and like just kind of read a few pages, set it down, read a few more pages, and it's just something I'm really glad to have around, because again, it just kind of was a good palate cleanser for when things were just, there's too much, you know, a little too much horror happening in my consumption of media right now. So this was really, really entertaining. Again, this is Madame Cat by Nancy Pena from the Life Drawn Imprint of Humanoids. Shout out to Holly from Humanoid for including this in the bundle she sent me with a bunch of Humanoids books that have been kind of an amazing trove books I keep diving into. I haven't talked about some of them yet, but there hasn't been one I have not fully enjoyed yet. So, you know, thank you again, Holly, for sending all that. I'm looking forward some more packages of books to check out, because yeah, this is definitely something I want to keep up, especially if Nancy Pena has more volumes coming or anything like that. Definitely like having this around. And anyway, it's also kind of nice having some books around that my kids can, like, you know, if they're taking something off my shelf, I'm like, oh, what is that? What do you got? My daughter recently was taking my Tales Designed to Thrizzle from Michael Kupperman off my bookshelf. And at first glance, I'm like, yeah, that's fine. I mean, it's some of the humor is a bit adult oriented, but, you know, nothing that, you know, kind of in the way that, like, I don't think it's going to, like, you know, affect her or like, you know, go over her head or whatever. And then I remember there's a few other things. I'm like, oh, no, wait. No, you're not ready for that yet. No. Which was hard because she already saw Snake and Bacon in there. And that was, you know, if you know what I'm talking about, then you know. So it's good to have a nice book like Madame Cat on my shelf that my kids can pick up. And I won't be like, oh, no, am I going to, is this a future therapy bill? Because apparently I have a lot of those on my shelf, and I should probably do a better job of keeping them out of grubby little paws. But anyway, that's besides the point. Madame Cat, Life Drawn, Humanoids by Nancy Pena. Really, really fun book. Really, really great little vignette stories. And yeah, just a really great, entertaining read. And I'm looking forward to seeing more. All right, so for my music recommendation this week, I'm going way back. I'm going 18 years way back to 2005 and the album Start a War from Static X. Now, Don, why are you talking about an 18-year-old album from a band that most people are like, are they still around? Are they still doing things? Didn't that guy die? A couple reasons. One, they're touring with their new frontman, Zero. They've been touring for quite a few years, and I'm kind of interested in seeing them live because they're also touring with Seven Dust. So these are two bands I've been wanting to see live since like 1999. So I'm considering doing that. And then also I recently got glasses, and the last time I got glasses on my way to the optometrist, I put this album on because I'm like, I remember not liking this album. So I wanted to give it another shot. And, you know, that was a few years ago. And I remember like, wow, I really like this album now. Like, I don't know what the difference is, just taste change or whatever. But, you know, I liked their first album, Wisconsin Death Trip. I liked Machine, their second album. I liked Shadow Zone, the third album, even though it was more of a, you know, definitely attuned to more of a radio metal friendly sound. And this being their fourth album, you know, was like a kind of like a hearkening back to those first two albums, a much more aggressive thing, but it just didn't, I don't, for some reason, just didn't, it didn't grab me at the time. But now it's like I am all about this album. It is probably my third favorite album from them at this point, because I still really love the first two. So you know, those are pretty top tier for me. But you know, it features the return of guitarist Koichi Fukada and programmer who sorely missed. You know, his contributions were definitely, you know, something that were kind of missing from Shadow Zone. And, you know, I really am glad that he came back. He also, you know, more guitar parts. And there's a lot of soloing on here. Or just that, just expect to have on a Static X album. So, but, you know, from, you know, songs like, you know, the big song from this album, I'm the One, is actually kind of like the weakest song on the album, to be honest. You know, there's songs like Skinny Man, I Want to Fucking Break It, which, you know, Static X likes to do this thing where they'll have, you know, from their bassist Tony, he likes to have some you know, Mexican influence on there, so he has some, you know, some banda music in there. And you know, I Want to Fucking Break It has the best mix of that and Static X's, just aggressive, grindy guitars that they've had ever or since or before. So, and then, their go-to Atsigo, track Atsigo Amigo, really good. And, stuff like Pieces and Dirt House, like these are just really good album, good songs that I never really dug into on this album, And I still don't really like I'm the One, that single, but it's fine. In the grand scheme of things, it's fine. But there's just so many other better songs on there. So many great riffs, so many great just programmed synth parts and stuff like that. And just, it's just really, really, really an underrated album in their catalog, for sure. This doesn't feature their original drummer. It features Nick Oshiro on drums, but he does a fantastic job. Tony Campos is still on bass on this. It's got Wayne. It's got Koichi. Trip Eason did do some guitars. He is credited on some stuff on here, but less said about him, the better. It is what it is at this point. Aside from that, this album is one of their best, and I think it's worth a revisit, to be honest. I actually did not give their latest album, Project Regeneration, a lot of play, and that was kind of built off of a lot of the unused tracks from Wayne and kind of, writing around stuff he had. So, and while when I listened to it the first time, I remember feeling like, yeah, it sounds like a Static X album. It just didn't really grab me. So I'm thinking I'm gonna revisit that again. Maybe I'll do a whole Static X retrospective or something, or not. I'm probably the only person who's interested in that happening. So anyway, but if you've ever liked Static X, any of their tunes, I think Start a War is, it's not a bad place to try to dive in to get a little deeper with some other stuff. So I'll see if I can drop in a bit of, I Want to Fucking Break It. Like, I got to drop in that part that I love so much. So that's what you're going to hear. So here we go. Start a War, Static X. It's 18 years old, but I think it's a good underrated album in the catalog and definitely worth checking out. This one's for the assholes. This one's for the freaks. This one's for the stupid. Hey there, so before I continue on with the show, I just want to take a minute and talk about Zencastr. When I first started the podcast, it was very difficult to figure out a consistent and easy way to record my guests and have the audio be at a quality I was accepting and happy to have and distribute and put my name on. And on top of that, having a way to distribute the podcast easily to all these multiple platforms like Spotify, Apple Music, Google Play, Amazon. Figuring all that could be an absolute nightmare. And for a while it was. And then Zencastr came along and just made my life so much easier. From having the source recording of my guests and having them be individual tracks and being able to process those in a way I prefer without having to lose any fidelity, to just having just a very simple one-stop shop for all of this. Zencastr has saved me so much time and effort, and this let me focus on making the best podcast I could possibly make. They have so many tools that I don't even take advantage of just because I'm a little more loosey-goosey with things, but if you are a bit pickier about ums and ahs, they have post-production tools that will find those for you and boom, gone. They have so many cool features that, you know, almost too many for one person to take advantage of. It's kind of staggering. But if you're thinking about podcasting, if you are podcasting and you just need a simpler way to record your guests, get stuff done, get it out there, I cannot think of any other place besides Zencastr that will make it this easy for you. So if you are a podcaster, if you're thinking about podcasting and this sounds like something you need to take advantage of, which I don't see why it doesn't, please go to zencastr.com/pricing and use my code CCM and you'll get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. I love listening to podcasts. I love making podcasts and I want everyone who's doing this to have as an easy time as possible doing this, because when this stuff is easy, the podcasts become more fun. It's just more enjoyable. You're not stressing about how am I going to get this out? How am I going to get this edited? How am I going to do all these things? Zencastr's got you. So check them out. Zencastr.com/pricing. Code CCM, 30% off. First month of a paid plan. Check it out. Thanks. All right, it is now time for my guest today. I am pleased to have on two amazing folks that I've been wanting to chat with about the amazing new Kickstarter book, The Return of Kamazats, or Kamazats, however you want to say it. But either way, it's an amazing book. It looks beautiful. It's a really cool story. And I can't wait to talk to these two gentlemen about it. But first and foremost, I'd like to welcome to the show. First up is a publisher of Grimcore Studios, Daniel Grimm. Daniel, thank you for coming on.
Dom, thank you so much for having us, man. I'm really excited to be on the show. I'm a huge fan. I'm in metal, comics, and coffee. That's honestly right up my alley. It's like a perfect Venn diagram of our demographic.
Yeah,
not only as creatives, but just like all the things that we like. So thank you so much for having us on the show. I'm very excited for our conversation today.
I'm very happy to have you on, along with the writer of Return of Kamazats, Rafael Flores Jr. Rafael, thank you for coming on.
Thanks, man. Same with Daniel here. I'm super excited to be on here. Big fan of the show. Big fan of comics, coffee, and metal. So, right up our alley.
Yeah, we there are so many of us out there that just that's the steam in our engines right now. Especially these days, and especially when running Kickstarters. But we'll get all to that because I've read the book. It's really, really cool. It's a beautiful looking book. It's a really cool story, and I can't wait to see more people discover the book and all that. But as you gentlemen know, the rule of the show, I have to ask, comics, coffee, metal, what are you guys digging right now? Let's go with Daniel. Let's go with Daniel first.
All right, so I gotta be honest, I haven't listened to that much metal for a while. I'm a huge hip hop head. So I've been listening to a lot of Kenny Mason. He's a great new artist. He combines kind of an alternative 90s rock with modern hip hop, and it's really beautiful. I mean, of course, you know, I listen to a lot of classic stuff. Biggie, A Tribe Called Quest, things like that. But when it comes to like more rock music, I've been getting really into the Dead Kennedys lately. I'm a huge punk at heart, to be honest with you. And the Dead Kennedys just really scratched that itch, especially some songs like Soup Is Good Food that just work so perfectly in so many contexts today. So I've been loving the Dead Kennedys. That's for metal. Coffee. Man, you know what? I'm Cuban, so I gotta represent La Llave. La Llave is a brand of espresso Cuban coffee that you can get. It's beautiful. It's so good that people in Cuba drink it. It's the closest that you could get to like. that's the metric, man. So
nice.
It's so good. It's the closest thing that I had in the States to what I grew up drinking. So. Definitely recommend it, La Llave. I think you can get it on stores. Made in Miami, I think it's made in Florida. So definitely recommend it. And as for comics, I mean, I just got a couple months ago, I got a subscription to Global Comics, and I've just been going ham reading so many series. Just last night, I finished reading Headlopper, which is a wonderful book. My gosh, it is so good, especially if you're into like sword and sorcery, barbarian comics. Definitely something to read right there. Headlopper, I also read recently Ultra Mega by James Herron. And if you haven't read that, you would really appreciate it as an artist. It's kind of like taking Ultraman and like Kaiju and mixing it with the violence of Invincible and just doing this hyper violent, really well written, fun shonen manga in the style of James Herron, who is just a wonderful artist. I'm an Image fanboy. So pretty much all I read nowadays is Image. And I've also been reading The Darkness, like the original Darkness comics from the 90s. Yeah. And dude, Joe Benitez,
oh, man.
Right there. Oh my gosh. What an artist.
I'm an old school like Top Cow, like back in the mid 90s, Top Cow was I bought everything. And when he started on Codename Strike Force, I'm like, who is this guy, man? And then he did Weapon Zero, and then he moved on to like doing some of the Darkness stuff and just moving on to a bunch of other stuff. But I know he does that Lady Mechanica, his own creator own book now.
Amongst other things.
But yeah, I still think about those, you know, Weapon Zero books and stuff like that. I just love the way he used to draw tech, and and for the longest time, Top Cow kind of had their almost like a house style, where you're either like more Silvestri or more Turner, Mike Turner type of stuff, and he was not that. You know, he was his own thing, and like I remember just really, really loving his stuff back then, and also who else was Brandon Peterson, when he was doing stuff with Top Cow. I really loved his stuff too. The Arcanum book, I believe, was that. And not so much digging his style now, but you know, that's how it goes, right? People grow, people do things. But yeah, Darkness. I was just looking at my old Darkness issues a few weeks ago when I was going through my old long boxes there, for sure. It's funny you mentioned, you know, the Cuban coffee, because I was literally just thinking about, there's a, I'm north of Chicago, but you know, I used to work in Chicago. I grew up and raised in Chicago, and the comic shop I used to go to all the time is in Chicago, and they used to do this thing called 24-hour comic book day, where you would, us and a bunch of other creators would like sit down in this comic shop for 24 hours and try to do a 24-page book, you know, to varying degrees of success. Of course, it's all about the experience and doing all that.
About that, I love that challenge.
Yeah, and you know, it's a really fun thing to do when you're young.
Right.
I cannot think about doing that now. But one of the times, there's a really good Cuban restaurant near the shop called 90 Miles. And they had, you know, Cuban coffee there, you know, the Cuban coffees or whatever. And I had to double check, because I went there like for dinner because my wife stopped by. And, you know, to have dinner with me. So I took a little break and I got a cortadito. So which was like a double shot with some sugar and milk. And I tell you, like, I have never had that much, like, I have not had any other coffee that has given me that much of like a buzz. And I, you know, I know there's like triple shots and things like that. So when you mentioned the Cuban coffee, I'm like, oh man, like. Yeah, I was literally just thinking about that the other day. Like, man, that was a hit. Because I love my coffee.
Telling you, man.
That's no joke. That's no joke. So I might have to look up this this brand you mentioned and do some digging there and all that. But
I think you would really like it. It's definitely very strong. I mean, Cuban coffee is like Godzilla coffee.
It does not play. It does not play at all.
Yeah. So definitely recommend it. It's delicious and nutritious, you know what I mean? So
there you go.
Get you going.
Those are all awesome answers. Rafael, how about you?
For metal, I'm kind of like a old, like classic rock kind of guy.
That's like my radio station. I listen mostly to the radio. So I like Ozzy. You know, I just listen to whatever's on the radio. Like Led Zeppelin's always playing. And I'm trying to think. Audio Slave. I'm big Audio Slave right now. And yeah, I also listen to rap. I listen to like Juice WRLD. He's like my favorite right now, favorite rapper. And I'm just trying to get more into like the goth music. There's this band called Prayers. I don't know if you've heard of them.
Prayers. I can't say I have, no.
But he's like, he does cholo goth. Like he said he invented it. I don't know if he invented it or not, but that's his, that's his brand or whatever. And, it's really cool. Like it's got like East LA kind of, Mexican, you know, Chicano vibe to it, but it's also like, it's gothic music. So cool. I've been listening to that, with coffee. I work at a library, so I drink a lot of coffee. But it's just like plain like medium roast, I think. I don't think it's anything special. It was probably some cheap coffee I got at some cheap store nearby. I buy like this big bulk container that has a whole bunch because I don't like, you know, I don't like the Folgers constantly having to get a new one, you know.
Yeah,
but and I try to get coffee that everybody will enjoy, so I don't want to get like death coffee or whatever.
That Death Wish coffee stuff, man. I will never touch that stuff, and I have a whole reasoning why. But you go on first.
I would have never touched it either. Comics wise, I've been recently. I've been rereading The Sandman. Oh, okay. I had never finished it. I'd probably gotten just the first volume, and so I reread the first volume. I got really into it, and I'm reading the second volume right now. And that was I'm really enjoying that. And yeah, I think that's mainly the one I've been reading so far. Next, I kind of want to go into The Walking Dead. I want to finish that because I haven't finished that one yet. And since I work at a library, you know, it's easy for me to just check out, you know, graphic novels. Yeah. I kind of just try to like pick, you know, series that I hadn't finished or that maybe I missed out on. And when we have like all the graphic novels, I'll like, you know, I'll check them all out and I'll just, you know, I'll devour them. So it's kind of what I typically do.
Nice. I actually just I just donated a whole ton of graphic novels to my library. And sweet. It's funny because I called them. Yeah, I wanted to make sure that they were accepting them at the time or whatever. I'm like, yeah, I got a bunch of graphic novels I want to drop off. And the guy was like, yeah, sure. Just, you know, bring them over. And I'm bringing them over. And these are like in like, you know, not that I intended to, but they're all in like pristine condition, you know?
Yeah, obviously. Yeah.
And they were good books, like, you know, like Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane, Blankets, like all these like a bunch of like,
yeah, that's a good one.
Well-known books that I just like, I'm never going to read these again. You know, a lot of them were part of a book club for the comic shop I used to go to. So I had all these books, like I'm never going to read these again. They were fine. I liked them, whatever, but I'm just never going to get back to them. Mm-hmm. And I bring this gigantic bin, and the dude thought it looked, his face lit up like it was Christmas. He's like, oh my God.
And you get first dibs. That's what.
And I'm like, oh yeah. Sorry. There's like, you know, so many. And he's like, no, these are they're like good books and they're like in really good shape. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I gave him the whole spiel. He's like, oh no, this is awesome. He's like, you know, people, you know, donate their books and that's great. But like some of these like graphic novels, people like the pages are falling out and stuff. And, you know, he's like, I like to make sure, you know, we have them. But like, oh, man, thank you so much. I'm like, hey. So, yeah. But yeah, actually, I have up to, I think, volume 12 of Walking Dead and the hardcovers.
Yeah.
And I think I stopped after a certain main character got killed. After that, the book kind of stopped being fun. Like, not that it was fun, but you know, just like my I really don't like the rest of these people as much as I thought I did.
Yeah, I feel that too. Yeah.
So I've been thinking about donating mine. Is where my mind was going with that. Like just donating them all, and just purging it and being done with it, and not thinking about how much I spent on all those hardcovers.
Man, like I'm right now, I'm in the process of donating, or not donating, but like trading in my comics, like my single floppy issues, to my comic book store. He's giving me like store credit. And my plan is to, you know, use that store credit to buy things I really want, which is also impulse buys, but whatever. But
And you know, as you guys both mentioned, you know, the music thing, you know, Dead Kennedys, punk is definitely metal adjacent. They're classic Dead Kennedys. Like, there's, you can't go wrong with that. You know, and you have you can't get more classic than Ozzy for metal. Like,
yeah,
that's, you know, I was literally listening to a whole bunch of Ozzy today on the radio because, you know,
it's always playing.
There's a running joke between me and my wife that no matter what, when we're in the car together, and if I turn on the radio, within like 3 or 4 songs, a Metallica song is going to play.
Yeah.
And it is the most hilarious thing because it was true for a long, you know, for the longest time. But since we've had kids, we don't really get to listen to what we want to on the radio anymore. just out of keeping the peace. So my wife and I were actually in the car by ourselves the other day for the first time in a while. And I turned on the radio and sure as shit, Metallica was playing.
Amazing. You gotta start them off early, man.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
no, even if you get like a mosh pit in the back of the car and the baby seats, but
I tried so hard to get these kids into like metal early, and they want none of it. They do not care whatsoever. No, they don't. I can listen to some pretty like, you know, some pretty nasty stuff, like, you know, this really low tune guttural growl vocal stuff. I've tried even going to like Ozzy or like even Metallica's pretty tame, you know, in the grand scheme of things now. And for a while it seemed like my son was going to be like, yeah, okay, cool. But no, he's just like, no. Like, if I'm playing my guitar or something, occasionally they'll come in and it'll start dancing around and stuff or whatever, but like, never. Like, if I'm playing on the radio, if playing something on the radio or whatever, they are not having it whatsoever. And I see these parents posting videos of their kids like asking for like, you know, Pantera and stuff, like a, you know, 2-year-old in a car seat, play Pantera. Like, and I'm like, man, fine, you know, that's fine. I'll get them, you know, before
they gotta, I guess they'll age into it, right?
Yeah, you know, what's going to happen is it's going to be like a Stranger Things thing where it's like they're going to be watching something that has a metal song in there or whatever. Yeah. And they're like, oh, I like that now. And then, like, you know,
it comes back. Yeah.
Yeah. And it comes back. We'll see.
The gateway.
Yeah. Cause, you know, it's, they're definitely, I see the signs to where I'm like, I could get you in with this. I just need to get the chance.
Right.
And my wife's like, why you, this stop it. It's fine. no, that's awesome. But yeah, you know, speaking of like you were saying that you're putting in your singles so you could like get some, you know, get some credit from the store and get some cool comics and all that. You know, that's kind of my thinking too. It's like, I just want to like purge a lot of things so I can have cool comics or buy these collections I want to buy of stuff I really enjoy. And what gets in the way of that a lot is actually the fact that I've come to know so many other creators now that, you know, we share our books amongst each other or I'm supporting their Kickstarters or whatever. So all my reading time is reading that. And I don't say this as a complaint because I'm just so glad that there's so many cool independent comics out there, including the one you guys are here to talk about today, The Return of Kamazats. And I gotta say, you know, you guys sent me the PDF. I was excited to check it out, and you know, I opened it up the other day in preparation so I can have a few days to read it and kind of process it before we talk about it. And I was pretty blown away about how, you know, beautiful the art is, first and foremost, from your artist, Azriel Aguiar.
Yeah.
Aguiar, their art is just, it is really, really cool. It's got that really heavy black kind of almost, you know, like a Mike Mignola influence on it a lot, but it has a lot more softness to it. It has a lot more, I don't want to say life as like a disparaging to like Mignola's work, because, you know, he's a master, but it has that kind of like additional like level of softness to it that that's really, really cool. And it really, really serves the story. And of course the story was really, really cool as well. I was in from the start. It's a hell of an opener. That second page is like, what's going on now? Like that'll wake you up for sure. But yeah, it's a really, really cool story. So I'm going to stop yammering on, you know, vaguely about it. And so why don't you guys tell everybody, what is the return of Kamazats?
You want me to say it, Daniel?
The writer, bro.
All right. Yeah. So the return of Kamazats, you know, it's a book I wrote, the comic book I wrote, coming out by Grim Quarter Studios. It's about twin brothers, Victor and Vincent, who go to Mexico to kind of have this closure with their deceased mother. And I take a lot of inspiration from Mayan mythology and specifically Kamazats and the Mayan hero twins. And I kind of made this like modern, I wanted to make this modern horror story out of it. And yeah, it, like, it starts off with them, you know, going to have some closure with their mother. And then they encounter, well, they decide to go to this Mayan ruin, or this Mayan pyramid temple. They go to this ball court, and that's when they encounter Kamazats. And if you want to see what happens next, you know, you got to read the book. You got to buy the book. So,
and having been having the lucky privilege to have read the book, you definitely want to read this book. It definitely goes in a way that's going to make you just dying to see what's happening next. As of right now, you gentlemen are, you know, over 100% funded, which is fantastic, which means, you know, anyone listening now, if you're going to go back the book now, it's already guaranteed. It's funded. Like, there's no no initial concern there. And it's just, you know, hopefully, you know, reaching some stretch goals and getting as many people as possible onto the book as you can. It is the first issue, and from you know, the story, I can tell. Yeah, we're gonna need some more. there's some more really interesting things that are happening here, because it's one hell of a cliffhanger we got here on this end page, and it's, you know, in the best way, in the best way that you're just like, I cannot wait for more of this. So how many issues is this story planned, or is this kind of like, hopefully just something that you just can kind of keep coming back to?
So it's going to be a 3-part series. Okay. And then we're going to put it in a graphic novel.
Okay.
And, you know, depending on how the book does, you know, we might do more in the future. So there's always possibility for that.
Awesome.
And I hope, you know, that this first part, the story that we're telling, not just this first issue, but like, the first, you know, 3 issues. Yeah, I really do hope it entices people to want more. So,
yeah, it, you know, I have no doubt anyone who reads the first issue is definitely going to be on board for number two. Yeah. Like I said, it ends in a hell of a way where you're like, okay, what the hell? what is going to happen next? Because it's definitely a very striking ending. And you did a great job with not only like the whole concept and the conceit of the story, but, you know, giving us these brothers and the relationship and how that's kind of, gonna color everything.
Yeah.
That happens, you know, that you can see happens book and will happen in the future. When you were, you know, thinking of the story or whatever that, was the, what was like the first ceiling of this story where you're thinking like, okay, what I guess it's a roundabout way of saying how much of the story was like formed in your initial idea as opposed to like as you know, did a first draft and kind of, you know, pounded things into shape and all that?
Yeah, I can tell you about like how I guess I formed the idea of the Return of Kamazats. So I released a short comic. It was a 2-page short comic by the same artist, Azrael. And that was kind of my attempt at, you know, just trying to make a comic book. Just to like, you know, learn how to do it, you know, learn how to hire a team, get a whole team together and make a professional looking, you know, book. Mm-hmm. It wasn't even a book. It was only 2 pages. So it was just like a, you know, page and a splash page. And that was kind of the challenge for myself. Daniel saw that, and he asked me to, he was, you know, starting Grimcore Studios. And he asked me to, you know, jump on board and, you know, start, you know, building this project up and making it into a series. And, I think, we originally planned it to be, you know, a graphic novel. And, along the way, we kind of like found good parts to split it up into issues. And mm-hmm. so we decided to, you know, release it as issues, and then we're going to release it as a graphic novel at the end. But the whole developing the idea, I mean, it was as I was going along. But there was some like elements of an older story that I had that I was developing on my own, where it was basically about this girl who turns her boyfriend into a bat, like a bat mm-hmm. creature. Kind of like a werewolf story, basically. Okay. And a lot of those ideas are in this story. I kind of took that old idea and kind of like twisted it, added the whole mythology, because I wanted to add more of that into it. And yeah, you know, I created, you know, just we started with like a outline. And it was, you know, it wasn't a very long outline. It was probably only like a page or two, because we knew it had to be a pretty small, you know, we didn't have that much space to tell the story. Like, it wasn't going to be a 12-issue series. Yeah, it was going to be, you know, a short series. So, the story had to be kind of pretty simple, but I wanted to add all the elements of the mythology. And so I tried to add as much as I could. And I think we did a pretty good job of fitting in enough of the mythology to where we hopefully people will read it and they'll get a good horror story out of it and they'll want to learn more mm-hmm. about the mythology.
Awesome, awesome. So Raphael, with the as you've kind of gone over the development of the book, I'm curious as to, you know, you mentioned that you had a 2-page short with Azrael that kind of was the the impetus for all of this. How much like input did Azrael have in the story? If, you know, was there like a lot of back and forth with it, or was it something you kind of just, you fleshed out and you gave the script and it was, kind of working from there?
So, I wrote the script, whenever we did the short comic, I wrote the script. I even drew out the thumbnails of, what I wanted the comic to look like. And I gave to him. So we did that with the short comic. With the second one, I just wrote the script. I wanted to kind of give Azrael more freedom to kind of, you know, create the panels himself, because I knew he could do it.
Yeah.
And I trusted him, and he actually had a lot more you know, input in this comic than the last one, because, you know, he's actually the colorist on this one too. He had a lot of choices in, you know, the colors and the setting, the mood. But he told me that, I think I write a pretty good script, you know, with like have backgrounds and I hopefully set the mood right, for him. Cause he told me that, like, you know, it was really easy for him to picture everything I wrote.
Cool.
So I feel like, everything he's drawn was either exactly what I pictured or even better than what I pictured.
Awesome.
Yeah, so working with him has just been a dream come true. It's been like, you know, it's been lovely working with him. So yeah, I couldn't say enough nice things about Azrael. He's like my bro. So
awesome. Yeah, there definitely seems to be a vibe coming off of the book. Like you know, if you would have told me like, oh yeah, we really don't talk too much, or you know, it was very like, you know, straightforward. Kind of hands-off relationship between you two, I would have been surprised, because it just definitely has the feel of something where it's like, you know, everyone's kind of all in and like, you know, getting their hands dirty and like just bouncing off of each other's work. So even though like you had the script and he kind of went from there and took it there, you guys were on like the same wavelength, which is so important, you know, a lot more rare than people think when it comes to working with artists and
a funny
stuff like
story
that.
About me and Azrael on the same wavelength. We actually got a tattoo, different tattoos. You know, I live in Texas. He lives in Brazil. And we both ended up getting tattoos on the same night randomly. And I remember I sent him a picture of my tattoo, and then he sent me a picture of his, and he was like, dude, we got tattoos on the same day. It was like, dude, we're like so in sync, man. Like,
there you go.
Like, that's awesome. So, you know, I love him, man. He's like a brother to me.
Awesome. Awesome. He got to do
a lot of the character design. So he did most of the character designs. I think we only kind of just gave him some like advice on what to do, but he was the, you know, the main guy, you know, designing all the characters too, and the backgrounds and the settings. So yeah.
Cool. Cool. That's awesome. Having worked with a good handful of writers and stuff like that, I haven't had like a bad experience, but there's definitely experiences where it's like, okay, you have the thing you want, I'm going to draw the thing. And there's other times where it's like, you know, we're just locked in, where it's like, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, did Ezreal ever have like suggestions? It's like, oh, can we like maybe do this or change this up? Or maybe, you know, change this idea for this panel to something else? Or was it just like, you know, from the get-go, you're both like, yes, yes, whenever everyone's, you know, just had their work ready?
Sometimes, you know, we'd have to make some changes, just depending on, you know, what it was. But it wasn't very often, you know, it was very few that we had to do that. So.
Cool, cool. Looking at the campaign, you know, like I said, you guys are funded. By the time this will be posting on Monday or Tuesday of the week after we record this. So you guys will have roughly, you know, still, you know, well over about 2 weeks left of the campaign to go, which is more than enough time to, you know, work through some additional stretch goals, if you guys have those planned or not, or just, you know, getting more people to back the book. You have some cool variant covers as well with the book. I like the gore variants. I like the chrome cover by Ariel Metal and Matthias Hube. Yep. That's really cool. That's a very striking.
It's a very metal cover too.
Yeah. It is. I have to say, like, my favorite image on the campaign right now is probably that psychedelic poster.
Yeah.
Like, that is so cool. That is very much a vibe, you know?
That's the one we've been holding on and we're waiting to show everybody for like the longest, man. Like, I wanted to show that since we got it back, but yeah, I'm so excited that to give that out to everybody, and that it's like a kind of like a poster that's added into every single tier. I think that's like, you know, it's a little cherry on the top for you guys.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's some great tiers on here. We got Grimcore Studios t-shirt available with that cool design for the Grimcore Studios. And yeah, so it's a really, really cool project. I'll make sure there's links in the show notes below for everyone to go check it out. But as I mentioned, you know, you have this Grimcore Studios shirt because it is a Grimcore Studio. I'm getting tongue tied with this Grimcore Studios book. And Daniel, you recently launched Grimcore Studios, and you know, this is the first, you know, big release from it that you're going forward. So what is kind of the thrust, the mission statement of Grimcore? What is like your goal with Grimcore and what you want to kind of do with it, you know, along with comics and as you go on?
So Grimcore Studios is an independent publisher that's just dedicated to making the best horror comics around. Mm-hmm. My vision for this company is basically to become a spiritual heir to e-comics, EC Comics and Vertigo and early Image, all of these different publishers that just broke the mold and decided to do different stuff and push boundaries, right? You look at things like 2000 AD in Britain or Heavy Metal in France, Metal Hurlant, and you look at the way that they looked at comics, right? And they didn't look at comics as this small, nerdy thing. Comics are an art form. and they're a very powerful way to convey ideas and art and just make stuff that's, you know, it has something to say, you know? Yeah. In particular with EC Comics, they made comics that were so impactful that they literally provoked book burnings throughout the country back in the 50s. Mm-hmm. The outrage against EC Comics because of the topics they were dealing with was so strong that people just, they held government hearings about it. And I mean, I do not want people to just get so mad about Grimcore Studios books that they're, you know, burning our books in a big pile of fire and, you know, but at the same time, an impact, right?
Yeah.
A massive thing. And that's the power of the medium. That's the power of the art form, that it can either inspire people or, and it can inspire them in positive or negative ways, right? I want to inspire in a positive way. But the stories I want us to tell, particularly in the genre of horror, which is what we focus on, I want them to be able to say something about the real world. Right. And something about the human condition, something about how do we live as people. Mm-hmm. Right. And not in a way that feels preachy. Like, I don't want to make, I feel like a lot of corporate comics, and I do want to say corporate comics, not comics in general, because 90% of comics is not what the mainstream is.
Yeah.
That's just like such a small, like Marvel and DC, which is just like the first thing that pops to mind, of course, for anybody that thinks of comics, is such a small part of comics art.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost insignificant when you look at it in the grand scheme of things. It's just like, it, as a medium, is such a big thing. Like, if we were to look at Marvel and DC in perspective, they're like Fast and Furious. You know what I mean? In comparison to all of cinema, Marvel and DC are Fast and Furious. They're like just one franchise. And you know, like, not to like attack that sector necessarily, but just to put into perspective, comics are such a varied, interesting art form. And they're so much more fun now than they've ever been.
Mm-hmm.
So many new people are making comics, so many different perspectives, so many different art styles and writing styles and ways of promoting and ways of getting comics to people. Like, just, you look at Webtoons and Kickstarter and an Amazon Kindle, you know, or just like your little flea market in the neighborhood has somebody making punk comics magazines, you know, all of those things. There's so much variety. And I just want us to be part of that, a movement, you know, of a new way of making comics, and particularly a new way of making horror comics that appeal to the audience, that have something to say, that are not preachy. You know, I'm not trying to make expensive PSAs, but they will talk about human values and real stuff, you know, like the Return of Camazotz. You were mentioning earlier about the relationship between the brothers, and that's what makes the story. Story is not about the blood and the gore and all of the different things that happen, all the crazy stuff. I mean, this story is basically, the horror in this comic is basically if Dario Argento went to Mexico and smoked a lot of peyote, you know, like a lot of peyote. That's basically what this story is. Yeah. But at the core, right, it's a story about love. It's a story about brothers who love each other and who are trying to deal with the death of their mother and who are trying to deal with grief. And how do you live through that, right? How do you get through that experience? And it also deals with a lot of other topics as well that I don't want to spoil. I think that people spoil too much these days, you know? Like, let the readers...
It's you know, I'm guilty of that myself, with just like giving away too much of things even I'm working on, just because you... you know, part of it being excitement and, you know, and the other part of it being like, you know, you want to have as much presence of what you're working on out there as possible. So you want to talk about it a lot. You want to bring up
show them the good parts, but you can't show them the good parts.
Yeah, it's exactly. And I'm better at it than I was, but I'm still not super great at it. So
and you know what? That's completely valid. I mean, it's just that that's completely valid. Like, you want to show the best so that people will want to buy the book, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, I feel like, look at a guy like Robert Kirkman, for example, right? Not everybody's at the level of Robert Kirkman. I mean, nobody's at the level of Robert Kirkman. The guy's like
multi-millionaire at this point. Yeah.
King of comics, pretty much. But I remember when he finished The Walking Dead, the serialized version, the comic that came out before the very last issue said, "We are going to start a new age on The Walking Dead." And it was pretty much setting up for like this huge thing, right? Or telling the fans that it was going to set up for this new age or this new arc.
Yeah.
And then the next issue was the last. So he surprised everybody with that twist, right? And he's done that a few times before. I think that because we're trying to hype up comics, right? And we're trying to hype everything, we kind of don't allow the readers to be surprised. We don't allow them to pick up the book and read the story and get to that one page and be like, what the heck is that? Right? Like, what was that, bro? that kind of moment that really shocks you. I feel like now people are trying to show that moment to try and sell the comic. And to a certain extent, I mean, that, of course, it depends on the project. Depends on the project entirely, and it depends on what your comfort level with that is and what your marketing is. But I think that our philosophy with the return of Camazotz has been, man, you have no idea how crazy this book is going to get until you read it. And once you read it, once you get past, like, what we show on the Kickstarter is really such a tame part of what the book actually is.
It is 100%. Just on the, you know, the rest of the first issue that I read, it is definitely not letting you in on just how intense things are, you know, are get in that issue alone and are setting up for the future for sure.
The first issue is kind of tame compared to what happens after, even.
Yeah.
So, and it's still so brutal. So it makes me laugh. I've gotten a few texts from people that are like, "Oh wow, man, you know, this looks so beautiful and the artwork looks amazing, and you know, I can't wait to see what the outcome is," right? And most of people are expecting like a very positive very positive story. And I'm like, I am so sorry for what we're about to do to you. And I'm not at the same time, because that's what we made it. But anyway, to go back to like Grimcore Studios and what we want to do with comics, I guess that in my insane ramblings while recording this podcast with you, if there is one thing that I wish people get from Grimcore Studios, is we are a group of people who love comics. We love comics, and we want to get together and make the best horror comics that we can for people, for the readers, the people that really matter, the people that are going to get the book and read it and put it in their shelf. We want to make comics for comics readers, right? We want to make stuff with beautiful artwork, with great stories that have something to say. We're not making content. You know what I mean? Like, we're not making content comics. We're making artwork. We're making art. You know, we're trying to be kind of like Vertigo and EC Comics and A24 to a certain extent, right? We're trying to make something that is going to stay with people, right? We're trying to make something that people will read the book and come back to it later on in their life. Right,
or something that has that kind of value immediately, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something that has that kind of value, that it stays with you, right? Like something that you want to come back to later in life. And you think, wow, that graphic novel was really good. I'm going to read it again, you know, or I'm going to tell my friends about it. You know, that kind of thing that goes beyond just comic book of the month. What I mean? Or villain of the month. Like, we don't want to do that. We want to take our time making the thing. We want to build the craft and build community around it. You know, like we're not trying to get fans in a way. You know what I mean? Like, we're not trying to just get fans we just want like random people that buy our comic and then we kind of forget about it later. Like, we're trying to build a community of people who love comics in the same way we do. Love the stories that we want to that we love and that we want to tell, and that's kind of what we're trying to build, right? We're trying to build this community of comics love. You know, it's all about love, man. You know, love covered in a lot of blood and guts, but love at the end of the day, you know. And that's what it's all about.
That's awesome. I love that, the idea. I love the mission statement of Grimcore Studios. With, you know, the creators involved and with, you know, the subject matter of this first book, I come to think, you know, is part of what you're doing also, you know, are you kind of specifically looking to, you know, Latino or, you know, Latinx, whoever whoever prefers those terms. I know that's kind of divisive for some people, but any of those, you know, are you looking for those voices?
So I'm a Cuban immigrant.
Or is it just kind of like everybody?
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm a Cuban immigrant. The way that, I mean, I just want to make it, this is not a Latino publisher. Like, okay. This is not a publisher that is just going to publish Latino stories or stories of any specific kind of creator. This is a publisher, right? We're a horror publisher. Having said that, and I guess it goes back to what I think is the difference between representation and inclusion. I think that inclusion is when everybody gets an equal seat at the round table. Everybody gets a chance to speak and show their points of view. Representation, which is what a lot of people are doing, is just you grab somebody and you slam them in the middle of the table and you start forcing everybody around the table to take pictures of them with the flash, right? And the person that you slammed in the middle of the table doesn't actually get a chance to be something other than the person being taken pictures of, you know? So I don't want to do representation. I want to do inclusion, in the sense that, yes, our creators of this comic are all mostly Latino. I'm Latino. I'm an immigrant. I'm extremely proud of that. My first job in comics was with Concrete Comics, which is an all-Black publisher, and I absolutely love the fact that I worked there. But I don't want to do... I don't want us to get to a point in which we're promoting the books as we're the Latino publisher and you should buy these books because we're Latino. No, we're a horror publisher and you should buy the books because the books are cool as hell. You know, like that's the reason why you should buy the books. And the books are going to have inclusion. And, you know, we're going to have Latino creators and we're going to have Latino characters and we're going to have Black creators and Black characters and white creators and white characters. It's not about the ethnicity or a specific kind of identity being represented. It's about the inclusion of different voices who all get to share their perspectives about things, never at the detriment of story. Okay. Always with the intention in mind that, yes, we are here to tell really good stories, and the stories are going to represent the points of view of the real world. I mean, like, kind of like you're telling a story set in the United States, for example. You kind of can't tell that story without having all these different ethnicities and all these different, you know, gender identities and sexualities, because guess what? That's the real world. That's just the world we live in. You have to have that. but at the same time, have those characters be something more than their identity. You know, like, don't just slam a Latino character in there and let them be, this is the Latino character. No, man. Let them be a person. They're a whole human being. Yes. And they deserve to be more than just your Latino character. You know, like this story, I don't even think about this comic, The Return of Camus. I mean, Raphael, you're the writer, of course, and you may have a different perspective on this, but I don't even think about it necessarily as a Latino story. Though every character is Latino, the story takes place in Mexico. There's this monster god that's from Mayan mythology. It's a very Mexican story. It's a very Latino story, but at the same time, we're not telling a story that's all about how it is to be Latino. We're telling a horror story that has Latino characters, that is set in a Latino space. But it's not about that. It's not about the identity. It's about the story itself. So I guess that's what I'm going for. I'm going for inclusion, not performative representation. You know what I mean? I'm going for art.
No, I think that
leads to better inclusion. You know, it leads to more quality, and it leads to people responding better to it. Yeah. You know, I think that's what leads to people thinking of people as more than just a tag of an identity. Exactly. It leads you to think of people as human beings, full complex human beings that go beyond just a tag or a label. You know, like everybody's a full human being. And if we're making art, we deserve to represent that people, include that people in that space as complex, full human beings that go beyond the label. And if they are there in the story, they need to be more than just the label. They need to be full human beings, and they need to make sense.
That's exactly what I get from this first issue. It has all, you know, its roots, you know, the Mayan trappings and the Mexican, you know, setting and all that. But it's about two brothers, you know, as we keep coming back to. It's about two brothers, their relationship, the relationship with, reconciling, you know, with their mother and things like that, and all the things that happened there. And I 100,000%, you know, agree with you in that, you know, inclusion, I think, is 1,000% something that needs to be on everyone's mind whenever you do a story, wherever it's set. But I also agree with you, it's got to be about the characters, though. No one's going to, you know, and, you know, even with my book, Evie and the Helsings, like, we have a few different characters included in there. The bass player of Evie's band, Jack, is a trans male. And it's not about Jack being trans male. Like, that's not the first thing, you know, Steve and I think about, my co-writer, Steve Bryant, co-creator, Steve Bryant, he's the writer. That's not the first thing we think about when it comes to Jack. We think about, no, he's just a sick bass player who loves his friends. They're like his family. And that's the character. That's who they are. And, you know, but you know, their gender or whatever, that's just a part of the a detail of the character, no more than Evie is a woman, no more than the drummer, you know, Dino, is an African-American male. Like, it's, you know, who they are is so much more important than the tag they have of their existence, of who they are and all that. So I 100% not that you need it, support your answer to this and the mission of Grimcore to just tell cool horror stories that people think about and enjoy and have good characters that because the best horror is when you have a strong feeling towards the character. Either you want something bad to happen to them or you want them to make it out okay. Either way, you know, you want to have that connection to a character, because all the cool shit you can think of, you know, that happens to people in horror movies doesn't mean anything unless you care about the characters, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, and that's, you know, that's where, you know, a lot of like horror movies like just become spectacle and things like that, you know. The latter Saw movies come to mind. You know, it just became like, what's a cool way someone can get fucking eviscerated, you know?
Yeah.
Or disfigured or something like that. I'm glad to hear that's the mission behind Grimcore. I'm looking forward to seeing what comes next. I'm looking forward to the future of the return of Kamazats, what's going on with that, you know, reading the next few issues and all that. And it seems like you guys got a really solid path to start walking down, and I'm really happy for you guys. I'm really glad that it's going that way for you all, and I'm looking forward to whatever comes next for both Grimcore and for you, Raphael. Just I'm there whenever you guys are ready to announce your next thing or move on to next thing. Obviously you're in the middle of the Kickstarter. You're like sole focus is this, but you know, I also know you're a creative person. So you're also thinking like two or three things down the line as well too.
Sure. Yeah, of course.
there's no rest for any of us with this.
We got a lot of great stuff coming out soon. Return of Kamazats is just the very beginning, the foundation of everything that's coming.
Yeah.
Awesome. Gentlemen, I'm going to let you go. It's been an absolute blast talking to you. I will definitely have you both on again, for sure. Either if it's for issue 2 of the Return of Kamazats or something else, Raphael. Same thing with you, Daniel. Like, you know, whatever comes next, you know, hit me up. Let's get on and let's chat, because I think the future is bright for all of you guys. And I can't say it enough. I can't wait to see what comes next. So now is the time to let everybody know where they can find you on social media. I'll make sure there's links to all that in the show notes below, and take it away.
I'll go first. You can follow me at Kamazats Comics on, you know, X, Instagram, Threads. That's where you'll find me, and yeah, that's it.
All right, then I'll go next. You can find Grimcore Studios pretty much everywhere. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Blue Sky, Threads, Dasher, all the socials. You can find us on all the socials at Grimcore Studios. We also have a podcast. We're available on Spotify, Audible, wherever you listen to your podcasts. We also have a YouTube. But more importantly, find us. Just find us on the internet. And right now, find us on Kickstarter. Find us on Kickstarter right now on the Return of Kamazats, the campaign of this amazing, brutal Mayan horror comic based on Mayan mythology and 80s horror films that is just going to blow your minds. It's amazing, beautiful artwork, beautiful writing. Do not miss out. This is the kind of comic that every horror fan needs on their shelf. So thank you so much for having us, Don. I am very, very excited that we got to have this conversation. And I'm very excited about your projects too, about Evie and the Helsings. I can't wait to have my copy. So thank you so much.
Well, it's a mutual love fest. I'm glad we, you know, finally got the chat, 'cause I know we've been talking about you coming on for, it feels like a long time, at least a few months.
Yeah.
finding the right scheduling and all that for that. And I'm glad it all worked out. And I'm glad that, again, the Return of Kamazats is, you know, well funded. Hopefully by the time this post, even more well funded moving along and all that. So, gentlemen, again, you are always welcome back. Thank you so much for coming on.